Numbers chapter 14, verse 24. But my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it.
I've been blessed in my life to see many great examples of Christianity. And I'm blessed because as a minister, I get to see parts of people's lives that maybe even folks you might be close to, you might not be aware of. And I just have a different perspective. I get to interact with people in a way that that opens them up and in a way that shows a lot of honesty and sincerity. And I'm blessed as a result of that because I've watched people go through some hard times, through some difficult times, and through some great times, and handle them in ways that are spiritually encouraging to me personally. Now my life as a minister is not one of selfishness in the sense that it's your job to lift me up, but I've watched some people show signs of strength and examples of strength that have encouraged me to move on in life and to grow up and to do some things personally. So I thank the Lord for that because He's the reason that those things occur. He's why people demonstrate strength. This morning, we're going to take a look at one of my favorite characters biblically outside of Jesus, of course. And he's one of two men that stood up to a crowd of people who were afraid. They were afraid to go into the promised land, the same way that a lot of other people are afraid. You know, it's interesting to me that they traveled. They were on foot. I have walked in the desert that they walked in. I can tell you it is no pleasant place to be. If you were walking around in the Sinai Peninsula, I can promise you this, you would not be saying to yourself, boy, I hope we can stay here another 10 minutes, much less 40 years, and then 40 more. You wouldn't be saying that. You wouldn't be saying to yourself, boy, I can't wait to get up this morning and walk through this 125 degree heat. Woo, yes. No, you won't. I have watched people perish in that same heat. It's not a place that it is. It's almost as if that place sucks the life out of you. It takes away from you. I've known people that have gotten lost, believe it or not, in the desert, because there weren't any landmarks to follow. There was nothing to see. Trees are literally marked on the map. That's how many of them there are. They're a little black squiggly line. If you look close enough, that's a tree. That's also why the natives, the Bedouins there, never cut them down, because they're landmarks of all the things. And yet, these people who were walking through this desert and were tortured daily by the environment alone, for some reason said to themselves, well, this desert's bad, but that promised land, that stuff's worse. You know, we've been walking. Why were you walking through the desert? Sometimes folks forget why we're in the desert to start with. And so the desert helps us to appreciate the gifts that God has for us. But to be in the desert, and this is human nature, more afraid of the change than they are of the burden of staying where they're at. More afraid of what could be there. And so they get close to the promised land and they send out some spies. And these spies go out into the land, and their goal was to do a few things. One was to find a pathway through that land so that when they made a military advance, they'd have a path to go on that they could survive in. Another thing was to assess the military readiness of those places and to see the resources that would be available along the way. And so these guys go out there, and they come back, and they bring back some of the bounty of what they find. But they're scared to make the change, at least 10 of them. And so what do? The same thing that human beings do every single time we have an opportunity to change for the better, but we're afraid, so we want to stay at the worst. We tell ourselves lies. You see, deceitfully, they presented some evidence and said some things that were truthful, but the truth of the matter is they also made up a bunch of junk. trying to scare everybody. Here's where my two heroes step in. Joshua and Caleb did not buy into that. They didn't take part in that. They didn't say, "Oh yeah, you know, those giants over there, I don't know what we're going to do." We're going to talk about Caleb. We're going to focus on him this morning. But the thing I love about Caleb, his name means hairy or dog. Not glamorous, is it? But I'll tell you what, that's one dog I'd stand by in a fight. Because he was willing to accept the promise of God over what his eyes and the fearful hearts of his peers told him. That's a man right there. By the way, gentlemen in the audience today, if you want to know what it means to be a spiritual man in a dark world, you be like Caleb and you be like Joshua. Stand up for what's right. No matter what everybody around you says or the lies they concoct, well, don't you see that that radical form of Christianity that you believe and trust in the Word of God, don't you see how that's a problem? No, not really. No. I see the fearfulness and the cowardice, the timidity and the shallowness of this world as being its own death. The fact that we walk away from the Word of God, we don't take His will, we won't accept His wisdom, we won't let Him lead us, we're going to vote on which direction we're going to go. Well, good luck on that. It's been my experience in the history of man that we don't vote well. So, when we talk about what it means to be real in this world, gentlemen, please hang on to the Word of God. Hang on to His will over the whims and the silliness and the ignorance and the pain of the world in which we live. Hang on to God. If you want to help your family, well, what do I, you know, how do I become a better husband, a better father? How do I do those things? Hang on to God. One of the pitiful indictments of our culture is that we have too many women and too many children that are spiritual widows. Their husbands still live. But they are not allied to God. And as a result, they are de facto spiritual widows. Now, there are some husbands that are in that category as well. Do you know that, and I'm going to throw this out for you, do you know that if a mother takes her children to worship service, I'm not trying to discourage anybody by giving you these numbers. These are real numbers. If a mother takes her children to service, every single service, not just Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, any other time there's a function, there's about a 35 to 40% chance that those kids will remain faithful later in life. 35 to 40. Now, if this is what's interesting. Do you know that if the father by himself, not with the mother, if the father by himself takes those same children, there's about a 65% chance that they'll remain faithful. That's a real number. Now, I'm not saying, well, mom, stop coming, and dad, you know, do you? No, that's not what I'm saying. If the mother and father both do it, it's almost 80%. Now, I can tell you what will kill that number is if people show up and then go home and act like the world. If you want to kill a child's faith, duplicity will do it every time. So I'm just sharing those numbers with you. So since I'm talking a little bit about, I'm talking to fathers this morning, mothers, I'm talking to you too. You know how important it is to be a spiritual example to your family. You also know the devastating pain of failure. So when we talk about great people this morning, one other thing I want to point out before we get into the substance of this sermon is that great things are said about Caleb. In fact, I appreciate what was read by Stephen earlier. My servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit, has followed me fully. I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Listen to that reward. You see, everybody else was afraid to go in. They were scared. Well, I can't, you know, I've got to, and do all those things. Caleb said, let's go. How old was Caleb? I love this. 85 years old. And you know the part of the land that he chose? He chose the hardest geographical part of the entire conquest. He wanted the mountains. Don't give me the flat land. Don't give me that pasture, that all easy stuff. Y'all divide up the easy stuff. I don't care. I want the hard stuff. Do you know that the land that his descendants conquered was the last land conquered in that entire invasion? Because it was so difficult. He didn't want the easy stuff. Because his heart told him, his belief in God, that we can even, we'll take the, God will give us the best. He's promised us the best. He's going to give us the best. Why have we got to choose the easiest? You see, there's something about a spiritual mindset that says, give me the easy faith. Give me the easy faith. Give me the one that just accepts everything about me, challenges nothing within me. And then we wonder why we don't grow. We wonder why spiritually we sit on a plateau and say to her, well, I'm here and I've been here and I'm not any stronger in my faith. And it must be the preacher's fault. It must be the Bible class's fault. It must be everybody else's fault. It must be the version of my Bible's fault. It is my heart's fault. If I'm not growing, it's not God's fault. He's given us every resource that we need. He's given us every opportunity we need. He's given us more than an opportunity to look at the world and see the reasons to grow. So if we're not growing, why aren't we? It's like sitting at a buffet and starving to death. I'm going to sit down at the buffet, but you know there's nothing up here I like. I'm always amazed at kids, at parents. Parents, I'm not picking on anybody because I'm not naming anything. I'm not talking about anybody that I've seen here, but I have seen parents struggle with, you know, they don't like green beans. If my granny made green beans, buddy, you were eating green beans that day. And there wasn't a discussion over, well, I don't like green beans. The texture's all funny. Are you kidding me? Texture? That's what you're worried about? Apparently, you haven't had to starve yourself through a winter before. Texture goes out the window when you're hungry. We ought to all be hungry sitting down at the Lord's buffet. We ought to be starving for it. Like our next breath of air comes off of what we get from Him, and it actually does. That was Caleb's point. So what is it to follow the Lord fully? I've often wondered, you know, what that means. I can tell you what I know it doesn't mean. I know that according to Romans chapter 3 and verse 23, we have all sinned, fallen short of the glory of God. If that is true, then Caleb was not perfect from a righteousness standpoint, though God esteemed him, loved him very much. That doesn't mean he was faithless, it just means he wasn't perfect. So if you sit in the audience today and you say to yourself, well, you know, Caleb, I could never be like him. Yes, you can. Because being like Caleb is a matter of decision and a matter of action. And we can all be like that. There's none of us in this audience today that can't be like Caleb and Joshua. And I would encourage you, I would use the word beg, but I don't think begging works very good, especially when it comes from ministers. But I would encourage you strongly to look at your relationship with God and figure out what it means for you to grow and be stronger. Then don't look around and say, well, you know, I'm better than so-and-so, so I'm all right where I'm at. Forget that. That's a poor attitude. It's a poor attitude to look at other folks and say, well, you know, see what they did. They messed up. And I didn't mess up like that, so I must be better than them. That's hypocritical and self-righteous. That's a pharisaical attitude in a lost world. And by the way, you're lost. We need to be people who look at the Lord, who look at Jesus and say, Lord, I want to follow You. I want to be like You as much as I possibly can. Not as a matter of power or authority, but as a matter of purity and holiness and oneness with the Father. Caleb was not trying to get people's attention. You know people like this, but if you sat Caleb down in a room full of 20 people, and maybe it was a focus group. You ever heard of a focus group? Is where people will be asked their opinion of a certain perspective, a word, an advertising, focus groups are used in industry all the time to sell products. But what they depend on is the honesty of the observer. And I can promise you this, if you sat Caleb down in a room with I don't care how many people and you asked him a question, the answer you're going to get back from a Caleb is going to be an honest one. He's going to tell you. Well, what do you think? What can we do to make that truck better? Lower the price? Make it achievable for a normal person to own? Well, what can we do to, you know, or maybe, you know, he might even say, I don't even like those. Maybe he's the guy that didn't like green beans. I don't even like green beans. I don't know why y'all put me in this group. You can do anything you want to them green beans. I'm not going to like them. Okay. That is a Caleb. But let me tell you the beauty of a guy like Caleb. Caleb is not going to lie to you. If you come to Caleb and you say, Caleb, I want to be a follower of God. I want to be, what do I need to be? How can I get there? What do I need to do? What do I need to change? He might look at you and say, you need to change your attitude. Oh, now, Caleb, come on. I was hoping for something a little easy. Now, you're attacking me. It's personal. It's a personal question. What do I need to do? Same question was posed to Jesus. What do I need to do to be in your kingdom, to follow you, to walk around with you? Sell everything you possess and give it to the poor. Wasn't the only answer Jesus ever gave, but it was the answer that young man couldn't tolerate. Caleb and Jesus, very similar in that regard. So the Calebs of the world are people that we need to appreciate because you cannot fix a problem you will not acknowledge. You're not going to change anything about your life if you're not willing to admit the problems that you've got. And preachers and teachers who master telling people what they want to hear, they're going to be dealt with one day. They're going to be dealt with. It's called the Day of Judgment. If somebody walks up to you and they have a glaring sin in their life and they want to talk to you about what it means to be so spiritual and so holy and all of these things, and they want your confirmation on that, you might have to say, wait a minute. What were you doing last night? Who were you doing it with? Well, what do you mean? You know exactly what I mean. I always love it when people say, what do you mean? Did you just hear what I said? What kind of life are you living? What is it that you're showing? And then you want to claim spirituality and righteousness and expect God to bow down like He didn't. Oh, I never saw. Do you know God sees everything? He sees all of it. And we expect Him to act like, oh, He doesn't know anything about that. He saw it. So when we sit there and we make these claims, I'm going to tell you what, honesty will help us tremendously if we will simply admit. Joshua 14, verses 8 through 10. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord, my God, fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you followed the Lord, my God, fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live, just as He spoke these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, when Israel walked into the wilderness, and now behold, I am 85 years old today. 85-year-old man stands up among young men, trained soldiers at this point, a disciplined military group, guys who thought they knew what they were doing. It takes an 85-year-old man to stand up and say, look, y'all quit whining and let's go. Quit griping about having to work for what we've got and let's go over and take it. Because God said we can. Not because you think we can't. Not because you're worried about what might happen. You might get a scratch. Do you know that the military losses of the men of Israel were almost minuscule compared to the armies they defeated? The only time, in fact, they were defeated was when they neglected to follow God. And God made that clear. It wasn't a mystery. Well, I don't know why we failed today. It must have been a bad plan. Poor leadership. Must have been bad equipment. No, you failed today because the one who was leading you into battle, who was giving you these victories, declined to do so today. That's the question you need to ask. Well, why did that happen? Well, there you go. That's the right question. Why did God decline to give us the victory today? That's the right question to ask. But what does it mean to follow Jesus all of our days? He followed Jesus, Caleb did, into the wilderness, into the land of Canaan. And a lot of folks, well, they don't. Lot's wife, remember her? She had a pretty simple task. It was to do what? Run away and don't look back. What is the one thing she did? Now, I'm not picking on women. She just happens to be the example that occurs of. Let me ask you this, in the Garden of Eden. What happened? One rule. One single solitary rule. Well, I don't like rules. I have a problem with authority. Well, good luck as you go to hell. Because that's what's happening. Folks, I'm going to tell you, the truth of the matter is if we'll just follow God, we'll find eternal salvation. We'll be rewarded beyond our ability to comprehend. And I don't know what you'll get in this life, but I know what you got beyond this life. And this life is a breath compared to eternity. No matter what it is you struggle with, no matter what it is you're tangled up with, no matter what it is that pulls you down, it's nothing compared to what eternity is. And that's not to say you won't be blessed here. The Galatians turned aside. Paul used the word in the New King or the King James. He said they were bewitched. That is, they were lured away. James tells us that we sin when we're lured away by what? Oh, because Satan's so good? No. I'm lured away by my own desires. When I fail, when I fall, when I am not where I should be, I can't blame none of y'all. I can't blame God, and I can't blame anybody else in the world. When I am not where I should be, the fault is whose? It's mine. Because I didn't follow God the way that I should have. Let me ask you this. Are you following God? Matthew 22, verses 36 to 38 says, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind." Jesus said, "This is the great and foremost commandment." He didn't say, "Some of your heart, some of your soul, some of your..." He didn't say a little bit of it. He didn't say when you felt like it, on a good day. You love God with everything you've got, all the time. That's the greatest commandment there is. If you don't know, some would say, "Well, I don't know the whole Bible." Well, I'll be honest with you. I've been dealing with it a long time. I still learn stuff. And I've been doing this for a while. Something in the range of 40 plus years. And even longer than that, if you count the time before I was a Christian. So when we talk about those things and we think about those things, don't think to yourself, "Well, there's so much I don't know, so therefore I'm just going to stop here." No. All your heart. As a deer pants for the water. What does that mean? It means like a deer that has run for its life and is nutritionally deprived and finds a source of sustenance and runs to that. And you know that deer just looks at that water and goes, "Oh, how pretty is that?" Right? No. Have you ever seen an animal find water that's been looking for a while? They drink that water like it's the only water on the face of the planet. It's all there is. They lap it down. They suck it down. So I watched a camel one time drink a bucket, 12 gallons of water out of a bucket. We had a pet camel when I was in Egypt on our observation post. We fed him. He lived out in the desert. He came up and ate our rotten vegetables and we gave him water. He would stick his head under the water. And you could watch that water level drop. It was a clear bucket. It was an amazing thing to see. I thought, "Now that boy is thirsty right there." And he was a camel. His name was Bert. Bert was the most well-fed, cared, and loved for camel, I think, in all the desert. He loved us. He missed us when we were gone. I don't know that the other people fed him like we did. We fed him really well. Bert probably gained about 20 or 30 pounds when we were there. We need to follow Jesus with all of our heart. Caleb followed the Lord fully, wholly. He didn't leave anything out. Lord, I'm following you. I'm following you with everything I've got, every resource. Every resource you've got. Ask yourself this question. How am I directing this toward God? Every relationship that you've got. Every relationship that you've got. How am I directing this toward God? Your house, your home, your job, the clothes. How am I directing this toward God? I had a parent come to me one time. They were concerned about teaching their children modesty in dress. Happened to be a mother concerned about her daughters. And for I was in a small congregation, and the morning came up. Gentlemen, you may have been in this position before, but I preached, led singing, served at the Lord's table all on the same day. And if the preacher's leading singing, especially if this preacher's leading singing, you know we're at the bottom of the barrel. So we were short on men that day. And so I'm handing out the Lord's Supper, and I discover why these young ladies are having a hard time with dressing modestly. Because when I go up to hand the plate to their mother sitting in the pew, you know what she's doing with her skirt hem, ladies? You know why she's pulling it down? You know why she's pulling it down? Because it's what? It's too short. So the next time that mother talked to me, we had to have a long conversation. It wasn't a pleasant one. Folks, I'm going to tell you, our hearts reveal who we are. We can talk about following the Lord. We can say we're concerned about it all we want. But if the lives we're living are not showing that, Caleb showed his faith through the life that he lived. Caleb went into battle believing that he was going to survive and gain what God said he could have, in spite of the fact that he was fighting giants and military folks and fighting in mountains. And by the way, any infantry soldier will tell you, you don't fight from the ground to the top. You fight from the top to the ground. The people at the top have the advantage strategically. Caleb didn't start at the top, folks. He started on the ground. And yet he still won. He still got what God had promised him and his family. He followed Jesus, to follow Jesus, if you will, despite the hazards. There also we saw in Numbers 13 and 33, the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, are a part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, so we were in their sight. It was believed the Nephilim were giants. And there's a lot of speculation over who they were. But they were big people. They were tall. They were large. It's believed that Goliath was descended from the Nephilim, if you've read the measurements on Goliath. Okay? And imagine somebody about 5 foot to 5 foot and a half looking up to a dude that's maybe 6.5, 7.5, 8 feet tall. And you're going to fight. Let me tell you something. It was hand-to-hand combat. It was not anything that was easy. And so when the Lord said, you're going to go up there, you're going to fight these people, I'm going to give it to you, you still had to face that giant and look him in the... well, kneecap or whatever your eyelid, your eye line was, you know. Okay, let's go. The faithful say, let's go. The unfaithful say, let's run away. The faithful say, let's conquer this problem. Let's go in there. God says we can do it. And the faithless say, well, I can. I'm not going to. I'm going to run away. Let's hide. God looks at the faithless and says, you're not going to be blessed with this. You're not going to gain the promised land. You're not going to get what you've been walking through this desert all these years to obtain. So how are we enabled? I'm going to give you two things, and then this will be yours. Numbers 13:30, Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it. How do you get to the point that in spite of all that you see, you know you're still going to win? See, Caleb, that's not a speech of doubt. That's not a speech that says, well, I don't think we're going to make it. You know, y'all, it could be 50-50. Maybe we'll outmaneuver. Maybe our resources, our weapons, who knows why we'll win. But Caleb says, we're going to do it. Surely overcome it. He didn't say might. He didn't say could. He said would. Overcome it. The world's going to look at us today and tell us we can't do it. You can't be people of faith in the world today because you've got to temper it with all the social things that bombard us. You need to stand up like Caleb, my friend, the dog, and look him back in the eye and say, you know what? God says to go this direction. That's the direction we're going. That's the direction I'm going. Y'all go your own direction. That's essentially what Joshua told them. You worship whoever you want to. As for me and my house, we're going to do what? We're going to worship the Lord. Y'all worship who you want to. Take those gods that we left back there in Egypt. Y'all think, seem to think so highly of everyone. And you know what the people's reaction was to Joshua's speech? Oh, Joshua, how could you even think that about us? How could you even say that's a possibility? How could you say that there might be some who would go that direction? Joshua had led these people. He knew who he was talking to. And if you look at their future history, as we know it, they were exactly the people he pointed out. Joshua was a wise man as well. How are we enabled? First of all, we need to learn to keep our eyes on the Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to understand how to make it through this world in a way of strength, in a way of power, in a way of significance, keep your eye on God. Don't take it off. Keep your eye on Him. I know, but I've got a problem. If you got sin in your life, repent. Yeah, but you don't know, preacher, how to repent. Stop it. Get the sin in your life out. Sin is a choice, by the way. It's a choice that people make. And there's an opposite choice you can make to go away from it. We live in a society where we're told that if you'll just be a victim, if you'll just lay down, if you'll just say, you know, give in to the fact that you've been so wrong, if you'll just take that in and accept that, let me tell you something, stand up and be the man or woman of God that God says you are. Be that person. Because you can do it. Just like Caleb looked up at those giants and into those mountains and he said, you know what? God said it belongs to us, let's go. Y'all sit back here and hold your little meeting and tell your lies. And all of those who want to take what God has laid out for them, let's go. Let's go get it done. Let me tell you something. Young people, if you want to know the value of understanding seniors and older people, it's the Calebs. It's the people who have fought the wars. And the people who have stayed faithful, and the ones who have... You look at those people and ask yourself this question, do I want to set them on a shelf and ignore them and forget them? What are you going to lose if you do? There might come a moment in time when your young heart is feeble and frail and afraid, and that old person will look at you and say, look, pick it up and let's go. Let's go. We're going to do it because God says this is what needs to be done. So, young folks, it wouldn't be a good idea. And I don't say that because I'm approaching that group. I'll never be in that group, by the way. If I'm 85 years old, I'm going to tell y'all it's middle age. So, when I get to be 85, it's going to be middle age. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but that's what it's going to be for me. I've gotten to middle age, and that's just kind of where I'm staying. You know, I'm not moving. Caleb was middle age. He didn't know it. We can be God's people in this world by having a different spirit. That's what Numbers 14 and 24 says, my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit, a different attitude, a different heart, has followed me. He's different than those people around him. Him and Joshua were two of a kind. Two of a kind. And I would imagine those two, would you like to have had dinner with Joshua and Caleb? Would that not be fun? Sit there and listen to these two. I used to have two gentlemen back in Detroit. They were the best of friends. They were brothers. They were of the same mind. They argued all the time. And not in a vicious way, but they're just like two old brothers. You ever seen two, y'all have been to Thanksgiving? And seen family sit at the table, and all of a sudden everybody says, we need to change the subject. You know? Because what? Two old brothers and two sisters are about to get into it. You know? But I'll tell you this, if you try to interfere, intervene, or otherwise inject yourself into that and you're not welcome, those two people will turn on you. You don't talk to my brother or sister that way. Well, you were just now. Yeah, but you don't. I'd love to have sat with Caleb and Joshua. I believe they were two strong-willed men. I believe they were two very faithful men. I don't know what their interaction really was. But I can tell you this, in a world that is so devoid of it, if you can put yourself in the presence of faithful people, you will be much better for it. It's one of the reasons, by the way, our worship times are so important. This morning, I want to encourage you. I don't know what your battlefield is. I don't know what your obstacles are. But God has a life for you. He has a life that does not involve being destroyed by sinfulness or fearfulness or timidity. He doesn't want us to be rude or mean, but He does want us to be strong. He wants us to be strong in our faith, in our belief, and in our trust. So this morning, I want to encourage you, if you're a Christian and maybe you have some obstacle in your life, do everything you can to pray about it, to talk about it, to get others to work with you. Deal with that sin in your life, whatever it may be. And if you are not a Christian, now is the time to become one. Because you will never win the spiritual battle ultimately without God. Without being fully committed to God, you will not win the spiritual battle. We don't have the resources or the ability to do that of our own, which is why Jesus had to come, so that we would have opportunity to have access to that kind of power and that kind of ability. This morning, I just want to encourage you. I love you. I know that the holidays are here among us. I say coming up, they're here. I don't know what happened to 2019. I really don't, but we're headed into 2020, full speed. And we're going to get hit right between the eyes with it in about another week, so a week or week and a half. So I just want to encourage us, in the year that's coming up, keep the will of God strong in your life. Put that forward, put it first, and assess yourself and ask yourself, is my life what it needs to be within His will? And if it's not, and in the areas that it might not be, then conform it to be that way. Make it that way. Get in there with your chisel. Chop it off, cut it off, whittle out what you shouldn't have, and insert what you should have. Add to it as you need to. So this morning, I want to encourage you, if you have any need, please come while we stand and while we sing.